Oh, excuse us there. Little technical. We have these leaders in the world, they don't believe in elections, preferring to allege they, the supreme leader, is the only one who can provide security and stability to the nation. These leaders believe that elections would just bring grief to the people. Hussein Mubarak, Omar Gaddafi immediately come to mind, as well as Bashar al-Assad in Syria and the Al-Khalafi royal family in Bahrain. There are lots more scattered throughout the planet. Well, now I have one more for you. This is a leader that once felt otherwise whilst a member of the opposition. But since becoming a leader through a democratic process, he has since come to find elections destabilizing and a distraction. Well, we have such a leader in our midst right here in Canada. His name is Stephen Harper. So good morning, you're listening to Plunder News.
As the veneer of democracy starts to fade, some say the internals are ready bands.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just.
Did you hear that one coming? When I started reading that, did you know I was getting the Stephen Harper? You could tell.
Yes, they're puny.
Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
Unlawful assent.
Is the meaning of our liberty and our creed why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall, and why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served at a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath.
We are a decentralized, nonviolent resistance movement which seeks to restore the rule of law and fight back against the organized criminal class. 0.1% of the population has consolidated wealth in aggressive ended fashion and launched an all-out economic war against 99.9% of the population. We are not affiliated with either wing of the two-party oligarchy. We seek an end to the corrupted two-party system by ending the campaign finance and lobbying racket. Above all, we aim to break up a global banking cartel centered at the Federal Reserve, the International Monetary Fund, Bank of International Settlements and World Bank. We demand the primary dealers within the Federal Reserve banking system be broken up and held accountable for rigging markets and destroying the global economy, effective immediately. As a first sign of good faith, we demand Ben Bernanke step down as Federal Reserve Chairman. until our demands are met and the rule of law is restored. We will engage in a relentless campaign of nonviolent, peaceful civil disobedience. In our next communication, we will announce Operation Empire State Rebellion. Operation Empire State Rebellion. Expect us.
That you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine won't be prevented from working at all.
$6 billion of corporate tax breaks. Deception.
Taxes. Corporate taxes. But you've become what you used to oppose.
You left me.
Fraud.
You left me.
The International Monetary Fund.
You left me.
Jets, jails, and corporate tax giveaways.
You left me over there.
Taxes low.
I can feel it.
Right now.
Democracy.
What the heck is going on?
$6 billion of corporate tax break.
Deception, different back and forth. Working with the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Huge democracy.
Huge democracy.
Subsidized big oil.
Yeah.
Economy. And here in Canada.
Found you in contempt.
Economy.
I'm going insane.
Continuous, constant control.
I'd have to be lending in my crutch. Sacrifice. Wrong economic wreck.
Where are the numbers?
Global consuming economy. The economy. that? Jets, jails, and corporate tax giveaways. Shut down Parliament twice. Strong economic wreck. For what? The economy, that? Truth, Connie.
Yeah.
Right now. Right now. Right now.
Yeah.
Democracy, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah.
72 hours. $6 billion of corporate tax breaks. Bickering. Deception. Taxes. Corporate taxes. Shut down anything you cannot control. Shut down Parliament twice. Strong economic wreck. The economy, that's the International Monetary Fund. Taxes, both. Democracy. Right now. Jets, jails, and corporate tax giveaways. What the heck is going on?
Good morning, you're listening to Plunder News. My name is Shannon. CKLN.FM on your internet dial. Like I said, Plunder News, where we plunder the news each and every week, 8:30 till 9:30. And, well, today's a special Canadian election issue, or edition, I should say. Part two. I've given up trying to be impartial about the election. There are just too many reasons to get rid of Harper. So many, I was unable to compile them all. I simply don't have enough time. So today, for the next hour, maybe two, we'll present a few of the more obvious reasons for regime change in order for this country of ours. Oh, regime change in order for this country of ours. Well, oh, Canada. Anyway. All right, last week I presented my first part on my Canadian election coverage, and I posted copies of the one-hour program at radioforall.net and on YouTube under the keywords Plunder News. So I encourage listeners to find these posts as I will only be glossing over some of the areas that I covered in depth last week. The issues covered last week were Bill C-36, a so-called Canadian Consumer Product Safety Act, we dealt with corporate tax cuts, and a study by the Canadian Center of Policy Alternatives, Richard Colvin, a Canadian diplomat, and Canadian-Afghan detainee issue. We dealt with CETA, or the Canada-EU Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement. We dealt with media and information controls via the Prime Minister. Strategic voting strategies, as well as federal party funding. And we also dealt with Sheila Harper and or Sheila Fraser, I should say, the Ombudsman of Canada, and her sort of unleaked study of $50 odd million going to riding up at Huntsville. What's his name? I'm going to forget him, but anyway. That's back in the news right now, actually, that 50 mil. The OPP has been called in to probe kickback allegations. The Ontario Provincial Police have been called in to investigate allegations of kickbacks in a taxpayer-funded pool and hockey rink project in Gravenhurst. All federal and provincial payments to the project have been frozen, pending the outcome of the probes by the police and government auditors. These actions come one day after the Star investigation revealed that the Toronto builder siphoned off $1.8 million of taxpayers' money from a $22 million municipal project in Cottage Country. Gravenhurst Mayor Paisley Donaldson and a spokesperson for the federal government and provincial governments said that the OPP has been asked to investigate. Star's research showed that the Dalton Company used a sophisticated kickback scheme to extract money from cement, steel, and other suppliers in Gravenhurst Centennial Center construction project and removed a renovated and expanded building that will house an aquatic center, ice rink, and fitness facilities. Subcontractors had to kick back up to 10% of what they were paid, according to the Star's investigation, which was based on the Dalton Company documents, town Gravenhurst records, and interviews with contractors and former Dalton officials who worked on the project. The project, paid for by the federal and provincial stimulus monies and the town's funds, is over budget, and ratepayers have been told taxes will increase as a result. The Dalton Company has denied the allegations and issued a brief news release Thursday, saying that the information presented by the Star is inaccurate and untrue. Dalton, a company run by the brothers Randy and Andrew, said it has instructed its lawyers to convene legal proceedings against the Star. So there you go. Some of the dirt on the previously leaked information on the $50 million funds diverted from a border exercise regarding the G20. Somehow this $50 million was moved up into the Huntsville, i.e. Gravenhurst area. And it looks like some of the federal funds went towards this project that is now under investigation via the OPP. All right, where are we here? So I got a few clips. I just want to run real quick. From Jack Layton at the leaders debate, and I'll just run quick and I'll be right back with some more news on Plunder News. My name is Shannon.
This is the same argument that we've been hearing for years about the mission in Afghanistan and why we called for the troops to be brought back and for a new approach to be used, and we still think that a new approach is needed there.
What do you say to our allies?
Here is the other issue I want to raise with you. I've been listening to make proposals in this campaign, and I have to just ask myself, how can people trust what you're saying today when your actions are so contrary to what you're offering to Canadians? I mean, there you were, supporting Mr. Harper on this massive program of corporate tax cuts, and now suddenly you're against them, the very ones you voted for. In the middle of the recession, you helped him ram through the HST on the backs of the people of British Columbia and Ontario, the worst possible thing you could have done to people trying to get things done at the and meet bills. And then you support him 100 times without getting anything in return. Right. I mean, you're Mr. Harper's best friend. And but now here you are offering yourself as an alternative. It really causes people to wonder, can we trust him?
There you go. Jack Layton at the leaders' debate last week. Can you trust them? I got right now. I got some more breaking news. Looks like Jack Layton is surging, according to Globe Mail and Star, and you know, basically across the country reports. A couple new polls have come out, and information reads as such: Jack Layton and the surging NDP are poised to see their representation in the House of Commons increase from 36 to 60 seats, denying the Harper Conservatives their much coveted majority, according to a new Ecos Reed research poll. All right. The Ecos survey released on Thursday has the NDP tied with the Liberals at about 25%, maybe 24 to 25%, while the Tories are at about 34, maybe 35% nationally. The Bloc has about 6.5% with the Green Party up at 7.8%. The poll after poll has shown the NDP making significant gains, including an Ipsos Reid poll released on Thursday as well, that put the NDP ahead of the Liberals for the first time in decades. But the ECOS poll also provides seat projection based on NDP's recent and unexpected climb. The ECOS numbers show remarkable gains for Mr. Layton and the NDP, winning as much as 24 more seats nationally, and the Tories considerably diminished, not even close to a majority government. Under the ECOS scenario, the Tories would see their seat count reduced from 143 to about 134. The Liberals would gain about 5 more seats, going from 77 to 82, and the Bloc Québécois would lose in Quebec, going down from about 47 to 32 seats. Would lose seats in Quebec anyway. There are 300 seats in the House of Commons, 155 are needed to form a majority government. Mr. Layton's gains would come mostly in Quebec, where the ECOS poll suggests the party moving from one seat to about 14. It all comes at the expense of the separatist Bloc, whose projection is to lose 15 seats. The ECOS, I'm not going to read any more on that. The point is made, and it's looking pretty good in that area for Jack Layton. He's actually in Quebec at this time. And, just speaking from downtown Toronto, we have good representation from the NDP, and we're quite confident with the NDP. So this is going out to Quebec and rest of Canada that we got no problems with the NDP increasing and possibly, perhaps, what? Well, definitely making a strong improvement, a strong performance, maybe one of the best ever. And why not? Jack Layton was the man right at the beginning identified by Canadians as the most preferred to lead this country. If you could vote for one of the three leaders, most Canadians did identify Jack Layton as the best candidate of the three. And it's coming out now in the polls, and perhaps could result in seats. Made a little bit of a shift in Canada. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed on that. All right, I'm going to drop one more clip here. This is all again from the debate, and it's Jack Layton, one of his issues. This will be on the Senate reform.
Jack Layton, what's Mr. Harper saying here? He's ready to accept that were he to get a majority, and I'm doing everything I can to stop it, because I'd like to lead this country, despite what Mr. Ignatieff says. But he could possibly do it with significantly less than 50% of Canadians supporting him. That's undemocratic. We need to change our electoral system. There's something wrong with the system that when a party, the Bloc Québécois, we'll pick that example, has 1.3 million votes and gets 50 seats in the House. And we've got the Green Party that gets 900,000 votes, not that far behind the Bloc, they get 0 seats. It's time that we had proportional representation in this country so that we had a proper representation of everybody's point of view when it comes to that House of Commons. And by the way, while we're at it, let's stop the undemocratic Senate from doing what it does, and it should be abolished in our opinion, wasteful and expensive and a repository for political friends. Let's get rid of it, and let's test the Canadian people on Michael that one. Let's really fix what's wrong in Ottawa.
Let me address
Mr.
that
Ignatieff,
question, because I understand.
Right, Jack Layton in the debate there. Yeah, so who knows? Under this coalition theory, and how do you call it, conspiracy, Jack Layton actually could become leader of Canada if he just gets more seats than Ignatieff, say one more seat than Ignatieff, and together they can perform, they could gain the confidence of the House. You could see, dare I say it. Layton is the Prime Minister. No. All right. Getting back to some of the news stories. This one here is coming out of the Star. Bruca Hutchinson is writing. Actually, this is going back. Oh, yeah. Regarding immigration. This is one of the issues that I thought was kind of interesting. I've always been critical of Harper's photo op business, where basically that's how he's been ruling our country. He doesn't mix with the people. He doesn't announce where he's going ahead of time so people can know, except of course the ones he wants to know, to say the ones he wants in his backdrop. You know, I can always remember that famous one where he came downtown Toronto with Fantino and met that the shop owner who was had issues with making a citizen's arrest, and he was actually charged for making a citizen's arrest and defending his property and his business, and he was charged, and actually then eventually he got off on the charges. So Harper flew down with Fantino right after Fantino was elected, you know, shut down Toronto rush hour traffic and booted down the highway and appeared right there on Spadina Avenue, Spadina and Dundas, for one of his little photo ops. And I don't know, maybe they made a little cosmetic change to a law that might allow a little more leniency. Anyway, photo ops is how he rules. He's been in this been in Toronto many times, but you never know he's coming till he's gone. And then you see the picture in the newspaper. So photo ops came up again in terms of the ethnic vote. They like to get their picture taken with a picture, you know, eating a piece of ethnic food. I was thinking that the, why doesn't he get a picture taken with him eating a piece of turkey? Isn't that like traditional food for white people like that from Ontario? Anyway, regarding the ethnic vote, though, there are lots of issues. It's hard to believe that Harper can court the ethnic vote. And I got a number of reasons right here as to why you shouldn't, why the ethnic vote really shouldn't even consider this guy. So we'll start this going back to December. Yeah, on December 23rd, the day and a half before Christmas, conservative government quietly slashed nearly $53 million annual funding to settlement organizations, the bulk of which came from the Greater Toronto Region. Of the $53 million, $43 million are cuts to Ontario settlement organizations. For some, federal funding made up 70% of their annual budget, and the cuts will effectively put them out of business. These came into effect on March 30th, 2011. According to the Federal Ministry of Citizenship, Immigration, and Multiculturalism, Jason Kenney, the current funding formula was based upon the 2005 immigration numbers and failed to reflect the current needs of new Canadians who are choosing not to live in what have historically been popular settlement areas such as Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. British Columbia had a cut of $8.3 million of funding, and Quebec did not receive any funding restraints. According to Eric Hodgson, Ontario Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration, 45% of all new Canadians land in Ontario, and as a result, the province receives 46% of all the federal immigration settlement funding. Well, at least they did. The vast majority of the funding cuts are being targeted to organizations that direct their services to particular communities based on, for example, ethnicity or gender, such as the South Asian Women's Center in Toronto, which was formed in 1982, and the Tropicana Community Services, for the last 30 years, servicing Black and Caribbean heritage-based Canadians. This is a shift in federal policy from funding organizations that provide unique services to unique populations to a policy that recognizes all new Canadians' needs as the same. The attitude reflects a larger symptom of Canadian immigration policy, which prioritizes the economy and the economic factors over human needs. And a lot of these organizations leverage their funding through the through volunteer help. So again, there's an issue of, you know, leveraging funding through volunteer help. You know, their dollars were going farther, getting to people that needed it. And now, under a conservative regime, it becomes economically not fair. how shall we say? There's a piece of paper here. I'm missing one. Yeah, one more on the immigration front is this story here. It says, don't vote conservative. Immigration lawyers warn newcomers. A group of Canadian lawyers and federal academics are urging voters not to support the Conservative Party in the May 2 election. Conservative Party has been telling visible minority immigrant communities, which it calls the ethnic vote, that it is improving the immigration system, said the group in a statement released Wednesday. A review of the record shows the contrary. A group of lawyers made up of leading immigration lawyers and professors across Canada said that the Conservative Party has misled public, especially immigrant voters, by making twisted statements about the state of Canada's immigration and refugee system in order to win newcomer votes. Among the group's claims are that annual visa quotas for sponsored parents and grandparents are down, not up. According to the federal government, the visa quotas for the parents and grandparents are up, but in actuality, they're down by 44% from 2000 and approximately 20,000 in 2005 to only 11,000 in 2011. It now takes 9 to 30 months longer to process these sponsorship requests, depending on the visa. Another issue is the backlog of skilled worker applicants waiting for a decision has gone up, not down, from approximately 500,000 in 2005. Oh, actually, just gone up slightly. Not from 487,000 in 2005 to 508,000 currently. The next issue is, instead of getting tough on smugglers, new legislation introduced by the party target the victims of smuggling, the refugees, by mandatory detention, denying permanent residency, and making it more difficult for these refugees to reunite with their families. And the final point would be, the Conservative Party claims to be sympathetic to genuine refugees who do not flee their countries illegally, but just announced plans to cancel the only program allowing Canada to protect refugees applying from within their own countries. The article goes on to say, It is one thing for the Conservatives to say we make our decisions, our policies, and live with the consequences, said lawyer Lonnie Waldman, one of the group's initiators. Voters need to make informed choices based on facts and not be misled by misleading statements. The group also points to the $53 million cut in settlement services, $43 million of which is being cut from Ontario alone, which I just talked about, the settlement services. Despite claims by the Conservatives that the new laws will crack down on marriage fraud, the group said it won't stamp out the bogus spousal sponsorships, but make reunification with mostly legitimate spouses more difficult. Worse, the conditional two-year permanent residency will trap spouses in abusive relationships, it added. 46 lawyers and professors had endorsed the group's claims so far, including a number that goes on about. The Harper Conservatives had a more generous policy towards legal immigration than any country. That's Kenny right there. Anyway, there's some serious issues there on the ethnic front, or the immigration front. And the courting of the ethnic vote by the Conservatives is a little out of line. If you want to pay attention to it, I know it was bringing up some attention this week, and I thought I should read those informations. Okay, we're going to go to another clip here from Leighton. I'm just going to drop one little issue here. I don't have a lot to say on it, but the Tories, regarding the HST, this is another reason why we shouldn't be voting conservative. Tories kill coordinated access to information. Oh, that's a different one. HST. HST with the tax removes the tax burden from corporations to consumers, increasing the cost of essential foods, essentials like foods and heat. The Ontario government admitted that the costs, the HST will cost citizens at least $500 a year per family. So just a very quick point there on HST, how it removes the tax burden from the corporation, putting it on people. And we end up paying an extra $500 in Ontario here due to HST taxes on our food and our heating and oil and gas, which is, yeah, another major part of the HST issue. So do keep that in mind when you're going to vote. And here's another clip from our, well, my favorite leader right now anyway, Jack Layton, and he's dealing with... we'll let him see what he has to say. You're listening to Plunder News, 88.1 FM in Toronto. My name is Shannon.
Why is it now that the government there is being cited with contempt? Why is it now being known as a government that is so secretive and won't allow information out for its citizens? Why can't we even have open debates about foreign policy issues instead of having groups and organizations like Kairos, Rights and Democracy, we could go through the list, being shut down? Yours is the most closed administration when it comes to discussing these issues that we've seen in some time. But let me ask you simply this. Will you support my suggestion that we meet and arrange with the Auditor General for that report on the funds for the G8, G20 to be released now that it's already been leaked in various versions? Let's have her final report released. Will you go along with
that? Well, I'd be absolutely happy to see the real report. Mr. Layton,
well, then bring it out. Bring it out.
Well,
release it.
It's the Auditor General.
What are you afraid of?
It's not the government.
What are you waiting for?
All right, that's a clip from the leaders debate last week. Okay, next issue for me anyway. Harper can't take credit for our recovery. He's constantly standing up there saying the economy, stupid. And he thinks that he's the one who has saved Canada from the recession. Well, let me read this article here, published by the Toronto Star, Friday, April 1st. David Olive, business columnist. It has seemed almost farcical to hear Prime Minister Stephen Harper warn that Canada's economic recovery would be jeopardized by a Liberal-led coalition of opposition parties taking power after the May 2 election. Canada's economic recovery from the worst global downturn since the Dirty 30s has been so rapid and sweeping that any government formed after the May 2 would be severely challenged even in an attempt to wreck it. Harper can't claim anything near sole authorship of the remarkable Canadian recovery. Many factors beyond the Tories' control account for the surprising strength of the Canadian economy. These are prudent practices of Bay Street, in contrast to the cowboy capitalism on Wall Street and London's City Financial District. The no-nonsense supervision of financial markets by our federal regulators were in place long before Harper became PM in 2006. At no time since the sustained economic prosperity of the Laurier era early in the 20th century has a worldwide boom in commodity prices been so well-timed for Canada. Soaring demand for our treasure house of natural resources, much of it from the emerging economic powers in China and India and other developing countries experiencing rapid growth, has kept prices for everything from Canadian oil to copper to potash at near record levels through most of the recent bad times, and has resulted in this recovery for Canada. Definitely, it's resource prices. They're high. Gold, silver, all of them across the board, and even food now. Harper, whose government fell on the question of abuse of parliament practice and not a stillborn budget, has done his best to scare voters about an unnecessary election that could destabilize the Canadian economy, which for now does indeed answer the Prime Minister's description of Canada as the closest thing the world has to an island of security and stability. Well, actually, that is so much the case that the world's markets are nonplussed by the federal government's abrupt fall. One of the big holes in Harper's economic miracle is the Toronto Board of Trade's recently cited crippling congestion in Toronto, pegged at a cost of approximately $6 billion as a prime culprit of the economic inefficiency of the Harper government. All right, I'm going to drop this piece now. It's from last week. I didn't have the right one. This is Ignatieff. Has more one of his more inspiring speeches, and I thought we should just get into it quick. It's 9:15. My name is Shannon, and you're listening to Plunder News on CKLN.fm. Where is it? Am I going to have a problem with that again?
We're in a funny place in this election campaign right now. We've got a prime minister shut down parliament twice, and Canadians kind of shrug. We got a prime minister who was found in contempt of parliament. It's never happened before in the history of our country. And people say, kind of, so what? We got a prime minister who tried to shut down the long form census, and people thought, that's crazy, but kind of, so what? And then we had a prime minister who just went out and smeared a member of his own caucus, tried to destroy her public reputation, and people say, kind of, so what? And then we've got a prime minister who's got a convicted criminal who was his chief of staff, convicted five times of fraud, and people say, kind of, so what? And then we've got a prime minister who's got right now in his election campaign four people accused of election fraud running his current campaign. And people say, kind of, so what? And then you start to, that's when I keep hearing that. And then we've got a prime minister who allows only five questions to the press. The press are following around. They only get five questions. And if they ask six, he walks away. And people say, kind of, so what? And then we've got a situation where at Guelph University the other day, students lined up for 2 hours, some of them voting for the first time in their lives, to vote. And a conservative operative tried to shut it down and stop it, and some smart conservative lawyer downtown tried to write a letter to get 700 votes by Canadian students disallowed in a federal election in Canada. And people say, kind of, so what? Just all political games. Who cares? And I kept hearing that refrain from Bruce Springsteen. Rise up. Rise up. Rise up, Canada. Rise up. Rise up. Why do we have to put up with this? Rise up. Rise up. Rise up. This goes beyond partisan politics. This goes beyond the Liberal Party. This is about our country. This is about our democracy. Rise up. Rise up. We have got to fight here. We have got to stand and fight. This is not about me. This is not about the Liberal Party. This is about the kind of democracy we hand to this child and this child and this child. We got to rise up. We got to stand. We've got to fight and we got to win. This is not about the Liberal Party of Canada. This is about the country you love. So rise up, Canada.
Right, so there he is. One of his more inspiring speeches this election period. And that's Ignatieff, of course, Liberal leader. And it's interesting how the issues aren't really the issue. The only real issue on the agenda is which leader you prefer. They just seem to be running on personality and pretty much personality alone, which I guess is giving Layton the advantage. And showing up in the polls. Let's hope Canadians take the bite. Why not? There's no reason why, after, say, what is it, 40, 50-odd years of deficit governments, basically every government that's appeared in Canada since the Trudeau days has produced deficits. We now have a record deficit. Was it $100 billion for 2 years in the Conservatives here? So whatever they like to say about the economy. They're no different than any previous government. They've all been liberal and conservative. Heck, how can the NDP do worse? Excuse me. Yeah, I think Canadians can easily be rest assured that an NDP government is going to be no worse than any federal conservative or liberal government. Right? It's pretty obvious. They've all pretty much been the same. Actually, it'd be good to see an NDP government in there. Maybe we can get some Senate reform and a working class-based economy instead of a corporate-based economy, right? Excuse me again. Yeah, most Canadians, like almost 50% of all Canadians are, you know, how do you call it? I wouldn't say poverty wages, but around the basic personal exemption, the 10 to 20, probably about 20 grand a year, maybe a little less, right? That's most Canadians are low income earning. It's as simple as that. They just need to get out and vote. We could have an NDP government. All right, this is our next article here. Tories kill access to information database. So these, you know, I constantly like getting back to the issues here. There's so many issues that are not being dealt with because none of them are. I've been constantly coming up with issues. Just to let you know, this show will be posted at radioforall.net, and you'll be able to see a visual copy. I got my video camera out, and you can see a video copy. Excuse me again. On the YouTube, it'll be posted under Plenty News with today's date. You can also catch out last week's show, Plunder News from the 17th of April. That's my first show on the Canadian election, covering a whole bunch of issues that I haven't had time to cover today. So many issues that I couldn't even compile them all. Like, I was thinking about reading a list of all the issues, but that would just sort of be a waste of time. No, sorry. It would take too long. Meanwhile, I can cover the issues one at a time and a little more in depth, which I'm going to do here. This one's going back to 2008. And the Tories have always been very in control of information and what's being put out there for the public to consume. It's all been about control, really, for Stephen Harper. And this is sort of the beginning of it. Actually, the beginning was the scrum, when he shut the scrum down at the end of a cabinet session or even a meeting of the House of Commons. The Prime Minister and leading cabinet ministers would pass by usually the steps in the House of Commons there and have to answer questions from the news gallery. And this would be an impromptu and sort of, spontaneous sort of event. It really put leaders on the spot and let Canadians know what was happening at that moment. It was actually one of the nicest things about Canadian democracy. Well, the Prime Minister shut that down right from the get-go. His first minority government, no longer was this scrum allowed. No indiscriminate questions were answered by the Prime Minister. Sorry, ain't happening. And his cabinet would meet in secret so as to avoid any chance of meeting the odd reporter and the odd question. So this is also along the line from 2008. It says here, the Tories kill access to information database. The federal conservatives quietly killed an access to information registry used by journalists, experts, and the public to help hold the government accountable. The coordination of the Access to Information Request System, or CARIS, C-A-I-R-S, is an electronic list of nearly every access to information request filed to federal departments and agencies. Originally created in 1989, it was used as an internal tool to keep track of requests and coordinate the government's response between agencies to potentially sensitive information release. So it was originally set up by the government in 1989 to protect the government from itself. But by 2008, users could mine the database to do statistical studies, fine-tune phrasing on new requests, and discover obscure documents, often using the information against the government. So the government turned around and shut it down in 2008. Some quotes here read, "It was really a tool designed to make the government more open, said CBC investigative journalist David McKay. A Treasury board official confirmed that the system was being killed because extensive consultation showed it wasn't valued by government departments. Since 2006, McKay had operated a website that called onlinedemocracy.ca, and you could organize your searches. You didn't get the actual information right off the internet. You would get information, like you wouldn't get the actual released information. You would just get report information on which information was released when and you know, basic outline of that information. So the information wasn't, you know, there for all, say, the world to see. It was just a database on the information that had been released. So that is shut down. And Canadians have been suffering from that. One of the reasons why we really don't know a lot about what our government's doing. It allows the secrecy to be maintained and, remain secret. Just another reason to vote out this current government. All right, I'm going to run this a little quick ad. I must admit right now that there will be a swear word in here. But due to the fact that we're no longer broadcasting on the radio FM dial, I felt it would be appropriate to run this little word. And it's not that bad. I heard it on other broadcasters on the CRTC FM radio waveland. So anyway, just be aware there is a word coming up. And I thought it would be appropriate at this time to let it run. So here it is. You're listening to Plunder News, 88.1 FM. It's 9:26. There's a possibility the Indy Red could be in, or perhaps we're going into overtime. Plunder News, 88.1 FM in Toronto. My name is Shannon. And, we'll be back, hopefully. Let's just run.
Astronauts are people that boldly do things that have never been done before.
Like playing golf in space.
That looked like a slice to me, Al.
Or littering on the moon?
Stand by. There we go.
Like an astronaut, Stephen Harper has done things that no Canadian Prime Minister has done before.
He was the first Prime Minister to decorate the government lobby
with photos of just himself and not former Prime Ministers. It's like living in a house of mirrors. A house full of memories of yourself. Mirror memories.
The first Prime Minister to arrest more than 1,000 Canadians all at once.
And most of them weren't even charged, so I guess that was just practice for when real crimes happen.
But most importantly,
he is the first Prime Minister ever to be found in contempt of Parliament.
Ever.
The contempt of Parliament? What does that even mean?
It means in recent years, Stephen Harper has consistently broken rules.
Rules designed to keep Canada a democracy.
That's why this election was called.
Because Prime Minister Stephen Harper violated the democratic rights of Canadian citizens, like you.
Don't believe it? Go to shitharperdid.com.
Yeah, there's lots of websites out there. That one, I think it's SHT. Maybe it's SHIT that Harper did. Anyway, check it out. There's lots of stuff on the internet. Just quickly. Sorry, I have to find this one. My favorite one was Project Democracy. And this one's allowing strategic voting. Basically, you go to this website, projectdemocracy.ca. You pump in your first three digits of your postal code, and you'll get the report on which candidate in your area is most likely to defeat the conservative candidate. And you can throw your vote that way, you know, to the one that got the best chance of winning. Where is this? Strategic voting, yeah, projectdemocracy.ca. Do check that out before you go into the polls. It's a good way of, how do you call it, making your vote count against Stephen Harper and supporting the party in your neighborhood that has the best chance of winning, which is probably a good idea. There's another site that I couldn't don't have with me right now, but I heard mention of it on other news broadcasts that you can actually vote for the party you want to vote. Or like in the strategic line, here's how it works. Say your neighborhood has a green candidate that doesn't have a chance of winning. But you want a green candidate in our Parliament of Canada, which is really important for the Greens because they can get some federal funding based on votes. At least, I don't know if it's votes across Canada or just votes per in the one riding. But I think, yeah, it's probably votes across Canada. So this is the strategy for the Greens. If your Green candidate probably doesn't have a great chance of winning, there's probably a Liberal or an NDP that has a better chance of winning. If you go to this projectdemocracy.ca, you'll see that. Anyway, you can still get a vote to the Green Party. Say an Elizabeth Mays riding, that's the leader of the Green Party. There's a website out here, I don't have the name, but you can find it on a search if you want, that would allow you to vote for that Liberal or NDP candidate, or even Conservative candidate for that matter, in your riding, and trade it for a vote for the Greens in a riding that has a chance of the Greens winning. So your vote would count, say, towards Elizabeth May's election and get the Green Party into the House of Commons, allowing them to get a house in the seat of commons and receive some federal funding, which would allow the Greens to basically expand across the country and fight a little stronger next time. So do investigate that if you're really into voting for Greens, but you're worried about getting Stephen Harper, Conservative, into your riding by voting for Green. Perhaps, the NDP or Liberal has a better chance in your riding. Check it out. Strategic voting is, and due to the fact that we have this parliamentary system, the first past the post, where the one who gets 153 seats is majority, and that's the end of it, or say they have 143 seats, which is going to be more than any other party, they have the first chance to form a government. It'll be interesting to see what happens if, say, the Conservatives do get the 143, due to the fact that they already lost the confidence of the House. I can't see the House just turning around and giving it to him right away. But, of course, he might have to give him a chance, right? So we'd wait for the budget to come down, and then it would be up to the minority coalition to vote for that budget or not. And if the budget doesn't get voted for, then the non-confidence vote comes down. There's a possibility that the Governor General would ask the Liberals or NDP, whoever gets the most votes, if they can form a government and get the confidence of the House. This is how our democracy works. And it'd be interesting if Layton gets in, if he has more votes, more seats than the Conservatives. Layton gets in, then he could, he would have difficulty proceeding with his abolishment of the Senate and some of his other issues. He would have to work within the coalition. So there would be certain restraints on an NDP or Liberal government if they were able to form after, say, the Tories, who are notoriously, suspected of being close to a non-confidence issue. If they do. Anyway, I think you know what I'm saying there.